There's a couple announcements before the service. The first one is that high schoolers will remain in the service. I'll mention that again in case you're not paying attention right now and you happen to be a high schooler. If you're not a high schooler, you're welcome to remain in the service as well, but it's, you know, a little more that they won't have a class going on if they don't remain in the service. Al mentioned that next Sunday there is an orientation meeting. So bring your compass, bring ways to make fire, and you'll meet in the social hall. The orientation meeting goes through explanation and talk about what LCUUC is and the various things about becoming a Unitarian Universalist, joining the community officially, and so on. And those are regular ongoing meetings. If there's any questions, you can stop and ask them at the welcome table, or just, you know, grab anybody and ask them and see how they reply to you, because it's kind of fun to put people on the spot and see if we ourselves know how you become a member of this community. And I was joking about the compass and ways to make fire, although you're welcome to bring those at any time. Mike Vera, this came in through an email that I saw yesterday. Have a peaceful, blessed, and happy birthday. You're actually celebrating my birthday with me, so happy birthday to both of us. Now, our speaker today is an active member of our LCUUC community, Reverend Shokan Mui. I'm saying your name wrong, aren't I? Close enough. Also known as Eric Moraine. Ordained by Roshi Maru Danda in December 2012 as a Rinzai Zen priest, Eric is trained in internal family system psychotherapy, esoteric healing energy work, nonviolent communication, and Zeg Forum, and greatly values the elegance of the Mondo Zen ego deconstruction process. He's been married to a very patient woman since 1984 and has three amazing adult daughters who've taught him more than he can remember. You can quiz him on that. He has proof. He is self-employed as a scientific glassblower, building chemistry and physics research equipment out of glass. On Wednesdays at noon and on Thursday nights at 6 p.m., Shokan can be found here at LCUUC, chopping wood and carrying water for the Kintsugi Sangha, a community outreach program of LCUUC. Thank you.
Atadipa, you are this light, pure, selfless awareness. Rely upon selfless awareness. Do not rely upon concepts of self and other that arise and fall away. Meditative awareness, clear intention, acting wisely, compassionately, and skillfully are this practice. Rely upon this only. Rely upon this ceaselessly. Now say it with me.
I am this light, pure, selfless awareness. I rely upon this awareness. I do not rely upon concepts of self and other than appear. I do not depend upon beliefs, sensations, and emotions which arise and fall away. Meditative awareness, clear intention, acting wisely, compassionately, and skillfully are this practice. I rely upon this only. I rely upon this ceaselessly.
Please take a moment to greet those around you. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our first hymn, number 38, Morning Has Broken. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community in the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you come from, you are welcome here. We welcome those who have known nothing but acceptance in their lives and those who have known the pain of exclusion and suffered disdain for their differences. Whether you were raised as little pitchers with big ears, to be seen and not heard, to speak when spoken to, or instead to ask questions, cultivate curiosity, argue and express yourself, you are welcome here. You are welcome here regardless of whether you articulate, blabber, chat, discourse, expatiate, flabbergast, gab, harmlessly hearsay, inform in impassioned idioms, jibber-jabber, kibitz, loquaciously locute, modestly mutter, natter, ostenerate, palaver, quiz, rap, speechify, twaddle, ululate, voice, whisper, xenoglossify, yakety yap, or zealously search for a Z word for your list and fail to find one. Silence is also spoken here. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. Stay current on services, events, and activities through our webpage at lcuuc.org or fearlessly click on a like button and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point in the service to set all your electronics to one-hand clapping mode, more commonly known as silence. And thank you for being here today. We are glad that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
So one of the ways we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children to stay up front and help me create a story. So I could use some bigger children as well. So, all right, so the bigger children might have to help from the pews. That's totally okay. So I want to ask you guys if you have ever heard of something called a haiku. Anybody ever heard of a haiku? Do you know what that is? What is a haiku? It's like a poem in a special way. Yep. How would you call it? What do you think? It's kind of like that? Yeah. Good. So that's kind of like what it is. Yeah, it's kind of a poem in a special way. It was created somewhere in the late 19th century. And it started out as letters written back and forth with, you know, between these people who really kind of liked each other a lot. And slowly over time, it evolved into this very special form. And I will give you an example. Together they play, first five, then seven, then five. Ah, do you haiku? So haiku is kind of a special poem where you have to count the number of syllables. There are only three lines. There's the first and the second and the third. And the first line has five syllables. So I'm going to need help with this counting business. The first line has five syllables. Do you know what a syllable is? Yes. It's kind of like counting the parts of the words. That's exactly right. So the first line is going to have five word parts. The second line has seven, and the third has five. And what I want to do is have us create a haiku together. Now, this is a kind of an entertainment sort of a thing, and in some circles, there are larger versions of it. There's one called a haiku norenga that might take a half hour or 45 minutes. You can do it sort of like a party thing. Might be kind of a weird party, but it's a fun party. And I've got instructions if anybody's interested in how to write a haiku norenga with a group. This was a formal entertainment that used to be done. And the person hosting the party was ultimately given the poem as a gift for hosting the party. There are traditional words that are usually used. There's some reference maybe to a season of the year, something about spring, summer, fall, and winter. Sometimes there's something about flowers in there, sometimes chrysanthemums or cherries, sometimes an animal, right? Writing class, haiku. Help me count this. Keep your arms and legs inside. Ka-chunk, the ride starts. There's another haiku. Here's one last one, and then we start to build it, okay? Help me count it. So haiku it is. Let us start the game today. Wonders never cease. 575. Who can help me with an opening line? What are we going to start with? What should we write about? You, young one, with the smile.
I knew you were going to do
this. What should we write about?
We want one word with five syllables.
We need five syllables.
Total.
For the first line. How about a first line? Something with roughly five syllables and we can tweak it a little bit.
Elephants sit down.
Elephants sit down. So there's five. Now we need something with seven that could come after elephants sit down. You had your hand up in the back. Oh, you had five. We need another five at the end. So maybe yours can be the five at the end.
It's a great
morning. It's a great warning. So if you've got elephants that are sitting down and it's a great morning, what happens in the middle? Who's got some ideas? If you've got an elephant that's sitting down and it's a great morning, yeah. Any ideas? What do you have something with six? What would you say? It is time for breakfast. It is time for breakfast.
Now.
Elephants sit, so we have a choice. This is a group adventure, right? It is time for breakfast. Peanuts? It is time for breakfast now. What do you think? Peanuts? Peanuts is two, that's right. So it's time for breakfast now. Did you have a suggestion?
Watching the sun meet the day.
What do we do?
Ride the donkeys once again.
Ride the elephants sit down. That's pretty funny. I like that. Is that okay? Could we use that one? All right. So this sounds like it might be maybe at a circus or at a petting zoo or at a carnival. Kind of like we're here this morning. This is a carnival. So we've got elephants sit down, ride the donkeys once again. It's a great morning. Sorry? Unless you're a donkey. Yeah. So they can be funny. Sometimes they can be very serious. But I'm glad this was a funny one this morning. And if anybody's interested, I've got very nice instructions. If you want more examples or want to write some more haiku, come and find me after the service, okay? And I can give you an instruction sheet. You have a question? You learned about haikus at school. Awesome. What school do you go to? Merton. Fabulous. Did you have a question too? No? Would you like? Good. Well, actually, I have a set right here, so you can take those back with you, but I've got lots more copies if either younger kids or older kids are interested. Thank you for helping to write a haiku this morning. And I need today's lantern bearer. May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. Please join in singing the children to their classrooms. The song is called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are written in your order of service.
Do that just once this time. This church is a community of ourselves. Its energy and resources are our energy and resources. Its wealth is what we share. As we contribute to the life of this community, we affirm our lives within it. The gifts of the congregation will now be gratefully given and received. Our thanks for these gifts given and received for the life and work of this community.
This is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns, and we do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. Would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Hi, this is Mark. First of all, a concern. A good friend of mine, I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, her father was evicted in Milwaukee. We still don't really know where he is or haven't really heard from him in a number of weeks. So just concerned about that situation. And then a joy for about 15 of us or so really got to participate in the great American Christian tradition of soulful gospel music last Friday night at Turner Hall. So, for a good cause with Cooperative Health. So,
hi, I'm Barb. Request for your continued prayers and healing thoughts for my sister Becky, who has is between her chemo and radiation and is really knocked down low at this point. And a candle of joy because I can feel the light returning. I'm sure everybody shares in that one.
Hi, Tony. A candle of concern for my mother-in-law, Terry's mother, who's having her second hip replaced. We hope that it will go as successfully as the first one and that she will finally be out of pain and perhaps experience a little lightness of spirit.
Thanks. My name is Beth. Two candles of joy. Number one, I'm finally off crutches and driving myself again. This is day three, and I'm super excited because it's nice to have those freedoms back. Number two, I was just thinking, a year ago at this time, my sister was in a locked facility getting treated with electroshock therapy for manic depression, along with a host of other things. And instead, this year, she was celebrating her birthday with her family and is working again and doing incredibly well. So a year later, it's a completely different picture from my sister, and I was just thinking how amazing that is.
Good morning. A candle of joy and concern. First for my dad, who just celebrated his 62nd birthday, and And then also for, he's also been battling leukemia, and I'm not sure how much longer he has with us. And then for my kids who are having a hard time processing that, so.
Hi, this is Chris. Just a candle of concern for the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, which brings up a whole slew of other issues, and I just think that it's very, very concerning, and it's been on my mind a lot, and I'm sure a lot of folks here as well.
So we light one last candle for those joys and concerns which we hold deeply, but which we have not yet named here today.
Our first reading is by Siddhartha Gautama, is known as the Kalama Sutra. The Buddha traveled extensively throughout his birth country of India. As was the tradition in those times, wandering mystics and teachers would be taken in by the local villagers, given free food and shelter in exchange for fortune-telling or teaching on whatever subject the teacher chose. These events would often last for days. The story goes that Buddha and his band of followers came to a town in north-central India where the Kalamas people lived and decided to set up shop. These particular villagers had just finished hosting another enlightened teacher who had also been given free food and lodging. They saw the Buddha as just the next freeloader hoping for good eats, and they challenged him. "We have just listened to another teacher tell us what to do and what to think, and how to believe. If your teachings are not in agreement with those, what are we to do?" He responded with a multi-day discourse that lays out the foundation of traditional Buddhist teaching. This lecture was eventually written down and is today called the Kalama Sutra. While the original offers many subtle insights and is quite detailed, since we're pressed for time this morning, Eric has asked that I only read the first 17 pages so that you can get on to the Super Bowl game. Or perhaps we also noticed that there is a three-line version of it, so maybe we'll go with that. This condensed version was delivered by Taizo Roshi, and his version, as I said, is just three sentences. To the question of who and what we should believe, Buddha replied, "Don't trust the teachers. Trust in the teachings. And don't trust in the teachings. Trust in the truth that lies behind the teachings." Here ends the first reading.
So join me in a moment of centering. And what you didn't get done this morning isn't going to get done for the next half an hour or so. So just relax and find the cushion beneath your seat and exhale and just be here.
Our second reading is by Rumi. I won't try to say his first name. It is called How the Unseen World Works. There is a South Indian story about soap. Soap is the dirt which we buy. We introduce it to the dirt which we already have, and the two dirts are so glad to see each other that they come out and mix. They swim together in the warm, pleasurable water, and at just the right moment, the washer lifts the cloth of our true being free of both soap and dirt. Mystical poetry and other practices may function this way, as soap that dances with what disturbs our clarity. Then at some moment they drop away and leave us clean, ready to be worn again. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our centering hymn number 286, A Core of Silence.
This is a very, very nice, delightful hymn, but I don't think we've ever done it as far as I can recall. So Tracy's going to play it through one time on the piano, and then the choir will sing it one time, and then we'll go back and we'll start all over, and the whole congregation can sing.
So thank you for allowing me to come up to this podium yet again. It's a real privilege to be here. And if I'm elected, I promise I'm going to clean up the mess that we're in and we're going to get this place running right. Actually, more seriously. So we're going to talk about talking. So listen to me now and hear me when I tell you. If you don't listen, you know what happens. I'll be back. That's how it works. When you're governor, everybody listens. Everybody understands. Everybody says, yes, governor. Right, governor. Whatever you say, governor. Right away, governor. No mistakes. Understand? If you don't understand, talk to the hand. Questions? No, I didn't think so.
And what if you're not Arnold the Gurlemon Schwarzenegger Terminator Governator? Then what do you do? Well, when we're not misunderstood, most of us muddle along, restating, stumbling, paraphrasing, looking for new words to say the same thing, maybe in a slightly different way. One thing that I learned at home is that talking louder and slower usually makes the other person angrier. So let's look at what communication is. Communication requires the transmission of data from one location to another, ultimately from one person to another. And assuming volume or noise are not an issue, transmission is what happens when communication is successful. Message sent, message received. It's easy. Or so it seems. Antonio Porcia says, I know what I've given you, but I do not know what you have received. The quote on the cover of the Order of Service this morning is a timeless example of the sorts of verbal knots that some of us are able to tie. Good communication and accurate transmission of data is important. Scientists, engineers, and lawyers tend to go with very accurate language and very specific syntax in the pursuit of really good communication. So for an example of a really good transmission like this, I'd like to ask Paul back up to the podium for a minute.
I have a chart to help in the understanding here, so I'm... So can you all see the chart okay? For a number of years now, work has been proceeding in order to bring to perfection the crudely conceived idea of a transmission that would not only supply inverse reactive current for use in unilateral phase detractors, but also would be capable of automatically synchronizing cardinal grammars. Such an instrument is the turbo encabulator. Now, basically, the only new principle involved is that instead of power being generated by the relative motion of conductors and fluxes, it is produced by the modal interaction of magnetoreluctance and capacitive directance. The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surrounded by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with the panometric fan, the latter consisting simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes. So fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal Lotus O Delta type, placed in panadermic semiboloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle sprung on the up end of the gram meters, as you can see in the illustration here. The turbo encabulator has now reached a high level of development, and it's being successful. Barbara.
You may not have recognized this fine example of accurate language, which quickly decayed into technobabble.
It's a classic called The Turbo Encabulator, and it was written by John Helens Quick, who was an engineering grad student. Barb interrupted this with an improvisation based on the John and Marsha radio skit by Stan Freberg. Thank you, Barb and Paul. I think you've just proven that you can make a fine transmission even without the use of technobabble. Some things are so simple, they don't really need technobabble to be described. You know, I mean, simple things like, you know, bananas and snow and apples and that sort of thing. And on the surface, everybody knows what those are and what happens if you want to describe snow. I mean, really describe snow. What if it's really important to very specifically describe snow? Because maybe you're an avalanche expert for a ski resort. You need to use some very specific words to describe those situations way up high in the mountains. Because if you don't, it might be life and death for the people down below. By some counts, the Inuit have 33 words to describe what kind of snow this particular snow is. Okay, well, maybe that's an unusual example, but apples are simple, right? Did you know there are about 7,000 varieties of apples? So describe for me the apple you last ate, and do so in such an accurate way that I'll recognize the variety by its name just when I bite into it, just from the taste of it. That's almost impossible. Maybe it is impossible. That is the level of difficulty faced by Zen teachers and their students as they struggle with teaching and trying to understand the subtle aspects of human ego and how this interferes with awakening. And very quickly, no matter who you are, you kind of run up against the limits of words. If only Spock were still here. He could teach us the Vulcan mind meld, and that whole mess of language and communication breakdown would be over. Our minds are merging. My mind is your mind. We think as one. He knew, right, to really understand and stay with someone, eventually you need to let go of the words. Deo Kokushi, 13th century China, also gave up on words. He says, wishing to entice the blind, the Buddha playfully let words escape his golden mouth, and ever since heaven and earth have been filled with entangled briars. All my good worthy friends gathered here, if you desire to listen to the thunderous voice of the Dharma, exhaust your words, empty your thoughts. For only then may you come to recognize the one true essence. At some point, no matter who you are, words will fail you as an adequate tool. Rumi, the Persian poet, also from the 13th century, says this about talking. Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I will meet you there. And when the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the words self and other, they lose their meaning. Maybe this lack of ability to talk about it is part of the reason so few have actually achieved it, this state of being fully awakened, some say enlightened. Maybe this is about direct experience, not about conversation. The French have a phrase about that intangible quality, that je ne sais quoi. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Words are all we have. And what does one do when words get in the way? When you can't find the right words to say. Do you stop using words? Well, maybe so. Stop talking. Zen even proposes stop even thinking. Just be present to and notice what is right here, right now, in this moment. The Chinese master after whom Rinzai Zen, which is my lineage, after whom Rinzai Zen is named, summed up this conundrum very clearly, very precisely.
Followers of the way, don't seek in words and letters. When mind is stirred, you will be exhausted. Even inhaling chilly air will not help you. It is better for you to realize with one thought that the world of causal relations is birthless and therefore transcends beyond the bodhisattva who surpasses even the three vehicles.
Question.
The great Hinayana, Mahayana, Tattva.
Question.
Well, statement, 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 statement.
Question.
Reassured statement, confident statement, confident statement, overconfident statement.
Question?
Elaborate defensive excuse.
Half-hearted agreement.
Insecure statement, distracted statement, absurd statement.
Clarification question.
Panic, explanation, quick, meaningless, comic, non sequitur.
Laughter.
Fake laughter.
Laughter.
Fake laughter. Fake laughter.
Laughter.
Accidental complement of physical characteristics.
Pleased response.
Shocked continuation of meaningless, comic, non sequitur. Relieved laughter. Relieved laughter.
Laughter.
Relieved laughter.
Superficial compliment.
Self-assured agreement as denial. Exaggerated statement? Exaggerated statement. Grossly exaggerated statement.
Clarification question.
Extremely exaggerated elucidation.
Mental compliment with an accidental double entendre.
Confident laughter.
Laughter.
Confident laughter.
Laughter.
Laughter. Laughter. Confident suggested proposal.
Violent denial.
A gasped repetition as question.
Disgusting violent denial.
Defensive incriminating implication.
Authentic retort.
Aggressive childish insult.
Disbelieving rhetorical question.
Aggressive childish insult.
Stunned silence.
Aggressive childish insult.
Defensive childish response.
Aggressive childish
defensive
insult.
Childish
aggressive
response.
Childish.
Defensive
aggressive childish.
Childish.
Aggressive
response.
Aggressive childish. Attempted condescending conclusive statement.
Brilliant, scathing remark with literary allusion and long-term devastating scatological implications.
Pathetic self-revelation. Thank you, Tracy. It seems that sometimes the actual words of the communication are not really necessary. This little skit began with an example of Zen babble as opposed to techno babble. There's also another flavor called cycle babble. And this afternoon we get to hear sports babble. And it then flowed into Act 10 of 20 Acts in 60 Minutes, which was written by the neo-futurists and can be heard on this American Life podcast. Sometimes it's the emotion of the sender which triggers resonant emotion in the recipient. And that is, in fact, the communication vehicle. And it communicates in a way that scientific or scholarly or legalistic language is incapable of. Often you'll find this idea of the message lies between the words in the arts. Poets sometimes convey so eloquently what the rest of us botch and kludge and mumble and stumble our way through. Too curious, the flower, watching us pass, met death, our hungry donkey. Here's one by Hafiz in a slightly different style. The great religions of the world are the ships. Poets are the lifeboats. And every sane person I know has jumped overboard. That's not so good for business, is it, Amy? Here's a more serious poem by David White. Above the mountains, the geese turn into the light again, painting their black silhouettes on an open sky. Above the mountains, the geese turn into the light again, painting their black silhouettes on an open sky. Sometimes everything has to be inscribed across the heavens so you can find the one line already written inside of you. In 17 short syllables, a haiku poem can say what all the techno-babble, psycho-babble, zen-babble, Tower of Babel, Tower of Babel, World of Confusion is incapable of saying. artists and musicians speak to the unspeakable better than lawyers, engineers, or even Zen masters ever could.
Tell you that I love you. I love you, though I can't think of right words to say. I long to tell you that I'm always thinking of you. I'm always thinking of you, but my words just flow. Always ends up to one thing, honey, and I can't think of right words to say. Ooh. Wherever I am, I'm always walking with you. I'm always walking with you. But I look and you're not there. Whoever I'm with, I'm always talking to you. I'm always talking to you, but I'm sad that you can't hear. Sad that you can't hear. It always ends up to one thing, honey, when I look and you're not there.
So anything I say now would take away from this moment. There is a way between voice and presence where information flows. And in silence, this opens. And with wandering talk, this closes. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell. Don't go back to sleep. The door between the two worlds is round and open. People are going back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds touch. Don't go back to sleep. So in closing, I'll offer one last word to consider. Opia. Opia. It's a noun. Opia. A recently invented word which describes that ambiguous, intense feeling when you look someone directly in the eye. Opia. Perhaps this is the closest most of us will ever get to experiencing a direct transmission. The person's eyes glitter, pupils jet black and bottomless, as if you were peering through a hole in a door of a house, able to see that someone is standing there, but unable to tell if you're looking in or if you're looking out. This experience can feel invasive and vulnerable at the same time. And when we look each other in the eye, who is seeing and who is being seen? Are the eyes the windows of the soul, or are they the doors of perception? And if so, does it matter? Are you the observer or the observed? The question becomes meaningless face to face with the direct experience of another human. The words make no sense anymore. You are now in the realm of the unspeakable. And when that happens, that is transmission. So be it. So, this is a time for the congregation to offer reflections and personal insights. This is a UU tradition called polylogue. Perhaps you have a question or a challenge or a follow-up. And raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
I'm Diane. I have a challenge. I wrote a haiku probably 50 years ago, and I can only remember the first line. So my challenge is for each of you to, for your own pleasure, just fill out the rest of it. It begins, "Trembling winter brides."
Eric, this is Gus. Thank you very much for that. One of the areas of technobabble that you could have mentioned also is Western philosophy. What you've shown today is not only a complement to Western philosophy, that is to say complement as in completing, not as in saying, you know, hey, you're great, but where the horizon of Western philosophy lies, that is to say where its relevance ends and something else begins, which is the world of the ineffable, that is to say what I can't say. So I thank you very much for that.
You're very welcome. And I believe Western philosophy is one of those fingers pointing at the moon. And we need that.
Your last point, the looking someone in the eye, I think about our work world, which is so virtual now, and phone and texting, and we don't often really interact, and how powerful that is to actually look someone in the eye. And then I thought about also, as we think about peace in the world, how difficult it would be to harm someone if you're looking them right in the eye.
Well said.
Is Mike. One of the most useful adages I remember about communication is, kind of goes, are you listening or are you just waiting to speak?
Yes.
Thanks, Eric. This is Al. It's funny how transmission works for me, I guess. I've spent time sitting with you for a couple of years now. And one of the things I know is there's a reduction of chatter. I have not gotten to the point of really excising the ego. But thinking today with the haiku, I love the donkey line. And so all of us, I'm sure, have found in some interaction, conversation, that a trigger is activated. And with effort, one can recognize that pulling before the expletive comes out. So going forward from today, I will remember that I'm on the donkey and try not to ride it.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there's a saying that comes out of Shambhala Buddhism. It's better for you to ride the horse than for the horse to ride you. When the horse rides you, it doesn't end well.
The interaction between you and Tracy was delightful and accurate and is really gonna cause me to really think about my interaction with people really close to me. I don't typically have interactions with people I don't know very well like that, of course. It tends to be people I know very well that I would have interactions like that. People I'm very comfortable with that I would tend to act like that. So I definitely need to think about that.
Have fun with that.
Hi, I'm Diane. Some of you know me because I come on Thursday nights to the Sangha. This is not a bought and paid for announcement, but if you enjoyed Eric's teaching and the teaching that he's given other Sundays when he's been here, please come on Thursday night. We meet at 6:30, but you can come at 6 o'clock because essentially this is what you'll hear. It's not woo-hoo, woo-woo stuff. We do sit in silence, but this is the same kind of teaching that you hear, and interaction and group discussion, which really helps to clarify and solidify things. And I'm so grateful for Eric's teaching, and so grateful that I can come on Thursdays and that I could come and hear him on Sunday mornings, and thankful to whoever lets him come up here on Sunday morning, because it's such a blessing. So thank you.
I think we have time for maybe one more.
Hi, I'm Bev. Listening to both your haiku talk with the children and your sermon, I had sort of an aha moment.
Oh, yeah.
For years, I've thought about journaling and even attempted it a few times, but it was always a whole bunch of words. And it seems to me that switching to doing a journal using haiku could maybe meet my needs, which actually are to share myself with my children once I'm gone, leave something for them to read and maybe know me better. So I'm definitely going to try the haiku method. I think it would leave out a whole lot of extraneous language. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It is not the memory of the flame from the chalice that we take with us out of this place. It is the flame itself that exists in us. Please rise in body or spirit, activate your inner Bob Dylan, and join in singing Blowin' in the Wind. Doug will lead us in this song.
How many roads must a man walk down before he called him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must a animal die before they are
singers are hard to deal with. Here we go.
How many times must a friend go before he can see the sky? How many years must a friend have before he can hear people cry? How many deaths is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Repeat that line.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Listen to me now. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination. The world calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. So be it.
song.